יהיו לרצון נמרפי בגיון ליבי לפניך, אדוני, צורי וגואלי. May the words of my mouth and thoughts of my heart be acceptable before you, O God, my rock and my redeemer. Shalom all and welcome, erev tov, buenas noches, bienvenidos to our kosher Torah school classes on the Torah to the teachings of the Kabbalah. We are presently in a series learning the Kabbalistic teachings of Rabbi Yosef Haim, known famously as the Ben Ish Hai of Baghdad. We are learning in his book called Dat Utfuna, knowledge and perception, knowledge and intelligence, depending on how you want to interpret the word Tibuna. We went through that last class. And of course, I am your host, Ariel Bar Tzedok. You find me online at the Kosher Torah School at koshertorah.com. Well, Dat Utfuna, like I shared with you in our previous class, is considered the Kabbalah primer that many, many people who come to the study of Kabbalah today turn to. Now, just for the record, when it comes to the study of Kabbalah, I will share with you that as I was growing up back in the 70s and the like, in the 80s, there was no such thing as public studies of Kabbalah. If you went to your standard yeshivot, if you went to your standard Jewish schools, and you mentioned the word Kabbalah, they thought you were a dodo bird from some long lost, you know, whatever. But things have changed. Now, what really came along with this change, unfortunately, was a lot of misunderstandings and misrepresentations of Kabbalah. We have today a lot of Kabbalistic cults. Yes, unfortunately we do. Christians, of course, are familiar with Christian cults, and it has developed that we have even, unfortunately, Jewish cults. And Kabbalah is no different. Now, there are different schools and the beliefs and ideas and philosophies of Kabbalah, but I am not going to address legitimate other paths. I am going to just make a comment about those which are not legitimate. What defines legitimate and not legitimate? Well, the word Kabbalah means that it's a passed down tradition. All right, we call the connecting the links of the chain. Well, you have people today who have innovated, made up pretty much their own ideas, their own systems, their own beliefs, and pretty much in all due respect, people could do whatever they want. But to call it ancient, antiquated, and authentic, I consider that to be wrong. I consider it to be misleading, and especially if and when they teach material in the name of Kabbalah or in the name of Torah, which is not authentically Kabbalistic or Torah, it misleads people into believing terrible, terrible things which misguide them philosophically, religiously, and spiritually, and could lead to other problems. As is my policy, I don't bother to point fingers or name names. I just feel that is not, I think such behavior is beneath us. No, that's why somebody here in Texas is giving me an example. No, I don't do that. But I will tell you this. Kabbalah, the authentic traditions, have always been part and parcel of the Jewish Torah teachings. Kabbalistic teachings are divided into different schools, and the school that we are learning now is called the philosophical Kabbalah, because it's not teaching you actual practical techniques of meditations, ascent, holy names, and the like, but the ideas that underlie the reality of all these things. So the word in Hebrew is iyunit, which actually means, if you will, contemplative, but they translate it in English as theoretical. I don't know why, but they do. But following along with the scholars, we'll just use the words that others do because it's easy. But in our theoretical, or if you will, contemplative system, we come to understand the greater nature of things, and that is good. When others come to try to twist and turn things and extract things from the original sources to make it something that it's not, that, of course, is bad. I'll give an example. In the theoretical school of Kabbalah, of course, it is based upon the teachings of Isaac Luria, and the entire Lurianic school, of course, is based upon the Zohar. But the Zohar and Luria, of course, are only one or two schools of the Kabbalistic, if you will, enterprise. There's just so many other ways. There are those cults that want to elevate, for example, the Zohar, and claiming it to be even more important than the Torah itself. If you think about it, it doesn't make any sense, but this is what some groups and some individuals do, and that is fundamentally wrong. The important thing of Kabbalah, and that is what these classes are here about to do, is not only to read to you and to translate to you, but I hope and pray to explain to you. I believe that the only quality Kabbalah is relevant and understood Kabbalah. Why bother creating for you a web of myth, which will create for you a beautiful fantasy world of strange other realities? It's a great place to go in fantasy, but it really doesn't connect to your reality. Unfortunately, that's what cults and people who do not really understand Kabbalah do. Not here. I hope and endeavor that in our lessons, we're going to be able to recognize the value and the relevancy of this material. Let me give a direct example, which is going to be, of course, related to what we're going to be reading in a moment. In the Torah of the Ari, we speak about the worlds, and we've introduced them in our previous lesson. We will continue to discuss them now. And one concept that he speaks of very clearly are what are called the Pinimiyut Ha'olamot and the Chitzoniut of the Olamot, the inner worlds and the outer worlds. And people go jumping through hoops trying to explain and define these things. Well, let me just be very simple. The inner worlds are what we refer to as the psychological domains within the realm of mind. The human mind, the collective human mind, the universal mind. The chitzoniut of the Olamot, or the external worlds, are the actual worlds of form out there. Just like you have the inner world and the outer world within ourselves, the exact same thing applies here. Okay, now that concept hopefully is understood, you can ask, well, who cares? What difference does it make? Well, it makes a big difference. Because when we want to talk about worlds, and we want to talk about realities, we have to be very clear when we distinguish between internal reality and external reality. So, for example, Ezekiel the prophet, I'm sure we're all familiar with his famous Merkava vision. Was the Merkava that Ezekiel saw from the Penimiut, the inner worlds, or from the outer worlds? And you can say, well, what difference does it make? Well, it makes a big difference. The difference is, was it a vision inside his mind, or was it an actual flying saucer that actually landed outside where he was? Was it mental, or was it physical? Big difference. Very big difference. It's the same thing with everything. When we want to talk about visions or angelic interactions, is it from Penimiyut Ha'olamot or Chitzoniyut Ha'olamot? Very, very important to know these concepts and the difference between them. The Ari has made it very clear. All of Lurianic Kabbalah is only for Tikkun תיקון פנימיות העולמות, the rectification of the inner worlds. Only when Mashiach comes can the tikkun be brought to the olamot hachitzoniim, or the outer worlds. What does that mean? Just like the Baal Shem Tov taught, just like we taught in the beginning of this class, and I teach in all my other classes, Kabbalah, the worlds are psychological domains within ourselves. They are meant for inner transformations. This is what we call tikkun, or rectification, refinement, of the pinimiyut ha'olamot, the inner elements of the worlds. And that is what we focus on. What's going to happen in the world body social, the world body politic? Well, when Mashiach comes, whatever that means, whenever that is to be, I guess we'll find out when it happens. But for right now, following the wise wisdom of the Baal Shem Tov, we seek to rectify that spark of a Mashiach within our individual selves, and therefore bring Mashiach to our individual minds and souls, and from that, seek to bring it to the world. And that is the proper orientation, the proper way that we have to come to this material. So then, what is the real relationship of all these different worlds, inner worlds, outer worlds, upper worlds, lower worlds? That is what we're talking about right now. So, in our text, I don't know what version of a Hebrew text anyone has. We are reading in chapter 19 of the Hebrew text. This book does not exist in English. To the best of my knowledge, our classes here are the first translations of this material ever made. Let's just dive right into the text. The Ben Ish Hai is actually quoting from the Sha'arei Kedusha in the section that we are reading now. And the Sha'arei Kedusha we have already taught, and the lessons are available on koshertorah.com. Nimtza, we find. Ki komo shebederech hitpashtut ha'orot melamala lamata, as we find in the way of the expansion, the emanation of lights from above to below. In lacha sefira she'en kilula mekol ha'esa sefirot. There is not any one sefira that does not have or include within it all 10 sefirot. Vekol sefira v'sefira, and each and every sefira, mitchaleket la'alafim ravavot sefirot. Every single sefira of the 10 sefirot can be divided and subdivided into thousands and ten thousands of sub-sefirot within each and every one. Kene inyan b'hitpashatut ha'orot. This is how it is also with the expression or emanation of the lights. Mebifnim lachutz. From within to outside. Yiyal derech se. Also follows in this manner. Ki ha'penimi shebekulam. The innermost element of everything. Nikra keter. We call keter. And external to Keter, upon it is Chokhmah, and going external, till you finally get to the most external element called Malchut. Veken, kol bechina u'bechina, hi nithaleket, bederech zo, each and every element or aspect is subdivided again into thousands and ten thousands of specifics and specifics. What this means is very simple. Just like you have four different chemicals that make up DNA, we have 10 different sefirot, which are a generic pattern, which is divided and subdivided and subdivided into literal infinity. That is the way that we must understand the nature of sefirot. The sefirot, as described here in our system, are a general pattern, which are repeated over and over again. Now you can say, well, gee, okay, I got it. What difference does it make? Well, it makes a big difference. Because when we look at the sefirot, we see columns. Now you got to visualize the 10 sefirot in the form of the what we call the sefirotic tree, or some call it the Etz Chaim, the tree of life. We have the three columns, okay? Visualize again Keter at the top, Chochma off to the right, Bina on to the left. Beneath Chochma is Hesed. Beneath Bina is Gevura. Down that center column, beneath Keter is Tiferet. Again, back to the right column, beneath both Chochma and Hesed is Netzach. Left column beneath Bina and Gevura is Hod. Down the center column, beneath the Keter and the Tiferet, is Yesod. And finally, beneath the Yesod, Malchut. Three columns. Right, left, center. Okay, got it. Well, when we go and explain the columns, you have the right column, you have the left column, you can describe these powers as the expansive power, the contraction power, the balance power. Okay, you have all these different forces. But the point that is so important to recognize is that they are not absolutes. If you're going to talk about the right column of Sefirot, you must recognize that that right column has a subjective left side. When you're going to talk about the left column of Sefirot, it has a subjective right side. So, the right column of Sefirot has a subjective right, left, and center. And the left column of Sefirot have a subjective right, left, center. And the center, the same. Now, you could say, well, okay, yeah, I got the concept, so what? Well, this means a lot. For example, how about you and me? Let's talk about us as human beings. I am sure that we all know, biologically, we are born, for the most part, either male or female, right? Go study a little bit biology. You know about the genes, right? You know, if you have one gene like this, you're male. If you have one gene like that, you're female. Well, of all the genes that make you the sex that you are, remember, they're split in half, and only one extra gene makes you the dominant sex that you are, male or female. What about all the others? Ah, you are not completely unisexual. If you are born a male, biologically, you still have male and female within you. If you are born a female, you still have male and female within you. Males are predominantly male and recessive females. Females are predominantly female and recessive male. Okay, that's biology, but what does it have to do with Kabbalah? Well, let's go into the psychology, especially in the Jungian school, where in which Jung has explained very clearly and shown each and every male has an internal female psychologically, and every female has internally a psychological male. And the goal of psychological balance and harmony is for every male to discover and integrate and balance his internal female, and every female to discover and integrate her internal male. And that brings balance and harmony in psychology and in spirit, apparently in biology as well. Well, we have just described here the Kabbalistic order of Sefirot within Sefirot within Sefirot. This is the way that we have to understand these things. So when we want to subdivide Sefirot and apply to them the concept of Partsufim, or what we'll call Sefirotic faces, we referred to them early as Abba and Ima and Zah and Nok, which we correlate to the four major elements in our humanity: intuition, intellect, emotion, action. Well, to each and every one of those elements, they are not, again, absolutes. There are elements within everything. How many people can actually say that a thought is completely rational without any intuitive element or any emotional component? I don't think many. Everything overlaps everything else. And therefore, when it comes to understanding, whether it's our humanity, our psychology, or the nature of the worlds, or looking around and understanding nature itself, the flow of the universe, the way of Elohim, the Tao. You must understand that there are ways within ways, thoughts within thoughts, plans within plans, sefirot within sefirot. Will we ever get to the point where we can have an absolute, definitive, and final analysis of anything? I doubt it. How do you definitively and finally define infinity? I don't think that can be done. All we can do is the best we can with what we have. So when it comes to our understanding, we must understand the nature of the complexity. The Lurianic system will build upon this complexity and help us to understand things within the context of this complexity. This is why we contemplate it, and that's why it's called iyunit, or discovery, exploration, contemplation. Continuing. Lefi shebi'ur inyan ze bekol shar ha'olamot nitba'er etzlenu zulat inyan ha'asiya. Now that we've explained this matter with regards to all the different worlds, let's explain it within the exception of the world of Asiya. Asiya, as we know, is this physical world of ours. We live in the physical world. The physical dimension is made up of 10 sefirot. Now remember, there is pinimiyut and hitsoniyut, internal and external. And even before I read the material, let us look at the nature of our physical universe. What is our physical universe made up of? Well, we know there is matter. Yes, matter we know exists as far as we define it in four basic forms: plasma, gas, liquid, solid. Those are the four basic forms. Is that all there is to matter? Well, if you think that that is it, then obviously you're not keeping up with modern research in science. Science has discovered, or postulates, the existence of something called dark matter. Now, dark is not evil, like in Darth Vader dark or anything of the kind, but better to call it unknown. That there's another kind of matter, another realm of matter, which they don't know. They don't understand. They're presently trying to explain. And the interesting thing about it is that it is the vast majority of matter in our physical universe. Okay, what the heck does that have to do with anything? Remember we said there are 10 sefirot within every sefira? Well, the sefira of Malchut is referred to as the world of Asiya, and that means to matter itself. There are multiple different forms, and therefore there are the forms that we know and the forms that we don't know. That's exactly what we're talking about here. Let's read. Lachen neva'er inyanenu bekitzur nimratz. Let's explain this matter in great brevity. Let's just explain what's applicable to our application here. Hine, he states here, Sheva riki'inen. There are seven heavens. Now this mention of the seven heavens is a teaching that we find in the Gemara, in Tractate Haggigah. It speaks about the seven heavens and interesting applications to all things therein. We discussed this in the Legends in the Talmud series. It's online, Kosher Torah. Of these seven heavens, Ha'elyon, the highest level of them is called Aravot. Lefi shekolel shalosha sefirot rishonot ha'asiya. Aravot is made up of the upper three sefirot of the world of Asiya, and these three are called Galgal HaSechel, Galgal HaMakif, Galgal HaMazalot. These are the spheres of the mind, the surrounding sphere, and the sphere of the influences. It says here, mazalot. Mazalot are the stars or the astrology, but you have to understand that the way and means of the term here, mazal, are referring to the place of interchangeable energies from, if you will, higher domains to the lower domains. Astrology was never a predictive science, but an interpretive art of the flow of, if you will, psychic or cosmic energies as they overlap, kind of like as a babbling brook will overlap stones and things like that, and it goes, it flows. Actually, the word mazal means nozelet, it means to flow. So, this domain of the flowing energy follows a pattern, follows a way, and for those who are, if you will, tuned in, who can read the pulse of nature, you will understand the way. This is the third level, because remember, there's above this. There's the surrounding level, and there's the realm of the mind. What are these? Well, these are not necessarily explained in any great detail in the Lurianic system. In other words, they're explained within the context of Lurianic teachings. But these teachings have a much older origin. Let's move on. Beneath these three, remember we said we had the seven heavens. The first of the seven is called Aravot, and Aravot is made up of the domain, the sphere, Galgal, the sphere of mind, the surrounding sphere, the sphere of the Mazalot. The next five spheres are the spheres of the planets: Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, the Sun, Venus, and these correspond to the Sephirot of Hesed, Gevura, Tiferet, Netzach, and Hod. And in the Lurianic system, whenever we refer to the influence of the planets, very radically different from earlier systems of astrology, the Lurianic system endeavors to explain the powers of the planets psychologically. So it does not look to an ephemeris. It does not look to plot the places of stars in the sky or to cast horoscopes or the like. Lurianic astrology is more like a sephirotic reading than it is an astrological one. It's different from the older systems. Like I said, there are different systems. And the nature of the applications and interpretations you will find differ from different interpretations of the Lurianic school, one from the other. So you can go in, for example, into the Sefer Yetzirah. A good example is Arya Kaplan's Sefer Yetzirah. And of course, we cover this material in our Sefer Yetzirah course as well. And you will find the applications of Sephirot to different planets and stars and body parts and letters and this. They differ from system to system. Everybody's got their own different interpretations, their own different system. Well, which one's right? Why do you think there is a right and a wrong? When you're dealing with art and you're looking at classical art or impressionistic art, do we go and I say, which one is the correct form of art? No. Therefore, it's the same thing when it comes to the application of systems. You have systems which are of one's way, and you have systems which are of another way. Stop trying to find the real one and just appreciate each for whichever it is. Moving right along. The sixth sphere is Yesod, and that includes both Mercury and the Moon. And the final sphere is called Vilon. All right? The Eino Mishamesh Klal. And there it says there is no actual star or planet or light there, because that is the Malchut of Asiya. If and when you'd go into the Tractate Hagigah, and you would read about the different seven heavens there, it will mention Aravot, it will mention Vilon, and it will mention others. Are these the same as those mentioned here? Again, it's a different interpretation and application of the system. So don't go looking into the Talmudic interpretation of the seven heavens and the Laurianic interpretation of the seven heavens and the Sefer Yetzirah interpretation of the seven heavens or the other whatever from whatever sources you go. Remember, art, not science. Interpretation, perception, different strokes. When you put things into different compartments and you look at it here and here and here and there, it makes it a lot easier rather than trying to knock your head and trying to squeeze everything together and to make it one consistent theory in your mind. People write books, hundreds and hundreds of pages, trying to do just that. And in my opinion, they're running around in circles, wasting time because they're missing the basic point of, shall we say, different strokes for different folks. That means, practically speaking, when you go out and buy books on Kabbalah and this type of material, whether it's from a Jewish bookstore or Amazon, and you're going to read this version or that version, and it's going to be different, rather than say this is confusing or this is wrong or this is right, rather just say this is the opinion of the author. The author's opinion is based upon a different school of philosophy from which he bases his orientation. Period. That's it. You can have systems from the Breslov school, the Ashlag school, the Lubavitch school. All of them are different from one another. Fine, good, so be it. It doesn't matter. Just try to recognize each one as it is. So, somebody is mentioning here, is not one Atzilutic and the other Asiatic? We are not even talking about the realm of Atzilut. We are talking about the realm of Asiya. Now, technically speaking, the realm which we just described as Aravot, which is the upper three Sefirot of Asiya, that includes the Atzilut of Asiya. Because remember, every realm has within it every other. So what do you learn from this? Penimiyut ha'olamot, chitzoniyut ha'olamot. We're talking about the realm of matter, the realm of form. We're going to learn in a minute that the Malchut of Asiya is our physical universe. What about these upper universes? If you read it carefully, it indicates to us that there is an actual place and not just a psychological level, but an actual place called Aravot. And it is to that place, apparently referenced in the Talmud and the older systems, to which the prophets and the sons of ascent, daughter of ascent as well, would be able to, we would today call astrally travel to them. This is actual, if you allow me to use the Deep Purple term, space trucking. Traveling through the power of mind to different dimensions in space. Times and relative dimensions in space. TARDIS. Go ask Doctor Who. He'll tell you all about it. But yes, this is what practical Kabbalah, prophetic Kabbalah is all about. Traveling to the chitzoniyut of these olamot, the external forms, even though it's through the power of mind. Well, the Ari Lurianic system is not dealing with that element right now. But I want you to know that it exists. And so that if we do have visitors from some other domain, here is the problem. You know, I'm a guest periodically on the Ancient Aliens television program on the History Channel. And of course, many of my fellow guests there, they are all of the impression that the, in quote, ancient aliens are all coming down in metal flying saucers. They're either little green men with big black eyes, or they're tall, blonde-haired, blue-eyed babes from the Pleiades, whichever. But either way, they're coming down in like metal spaceships, you know, flying saucers and whatever. They don't get it. That if we look at things from within the contextual history of what we can call true close encounters, cross-culturally over literally thousands of years, you will find that most experiences are energetic. Now, I don't mean internally within the mind, that does happen as well, but I'm talking about the actual true close encounters. They are somehow interdimensional, which means that the method of transport does not necessarily have to be mechanical or metallically based. So when we look at Ezekiel's chariot, if it was some actual kind of transport vehicle, which does say it was, why would we think that has to be made out of metal? Why do we think that has to be a weirdo type of spaceship? Maybe it's a dimensional slider. That is a more accurate way of our understanding the nature of things. Now, just to digress and extrapolate, according to our understanding based upon other sources, and I covered this in my book, UFOs and Aliens in Light of Torah, all the planets of our solar system are inhabited. Yes, there is life on Mars and life on Venus and life on Jupiter and life on Saturn. What type of life? That's something else. Is that life hidden in the inner realms, hidden under shields that we don't see? No. It might not be in our dimensional plane. You might have to shift to a parallel dimension and see Mars or Venus in that parallel dimension to be able to recognize the life that is on those planets. We speak, of course, from the Zohark tradition and others as well about life in inner Earth. Are there really all these great domains in inner Earth? Well, I've never taken a big knife and sliced the Earth open to look inside. Are they really there in our dimension? Or is it a parallel dimension? Being that we have different sephirotic realms, different realms and divisions within the Asiatic physical reality, who knows? Now, again, I cannot and will not draw conclusions to tell you this is or this is not. All we can do is ask the questions. Now, somebody in text here is actually hitting on a very important point, and I'll mention to it. He's mentioning the big atom smasher out in Europe called CERN, that they're opening up the new dimensions. Yes, very, very so. Because when you go and you take an electromagnetic force and you push it up against an equal and opposite nuclear force, they can actually open up parallel doors. Some will call these wormholes, vortexes, stargates. It is understood that this is what opened up at Mount Sinai. And that's why Mount Sinai was not believed to have been just a psychological phenomena, but an actual, what we will call, close encounter. So, when we come to understand the nature of these different realms and domains, we have to understand it within these concepts, within these ideas. So let's move on in our text. Okay, our physical world we call the Malchut of Asiya. V'gam hi ba'atzman nehalekat le'es ha'svirot sheba. Our physical realm is divided into 10 sefirot. The keter of the Malchut of Asiya is called Vilon. And then we have what are called the four foundations called Arma, which again we described as Esh, Ruach, Maim, Afar, or the four elements of fire, air, water, earth, or we refer to as the four levels of matter. The four levels of matter. Now, wait a second. We have the four levels of matter, and he said that there's this Vilon, this Keter. This is the higher level. What is this higher level? Well, this is something, Rabbi Chaim Vital mentions it, and Ramban Nachmani mentions it in his commentary to the Torah. He calls it by the original Greek term called hiyuli, the prima mater, the fifth element. There is actually a fifth element. Is it the power of mind? Is it the power of thought? Is it the power we would call life force energy? Chi? Is it zero point energy? We have all these different ideas and beliefs. But anybody who has ever been involved in any kind of experiential spirituality, which pretty much excludes almost everybody in modern day Judaism, or everybody in modern day Western religion, Judaism, Christian, Islam, no one gets into this stuff. Originally, this was very part and parcel of the Torah tradition, but it's been lost pretty much. Practiced by very, very few. Sufi will still practice it. Kabbalists will still practice. It's very similar to what we call chi work in the Orient, in the martial arts traditions, where which you get in touch with and you become aware of the energy underlying form. Form and force. May the force be with you. Well, that's the fifth element. Okay? So, we have the Keter. We have the four elements. And he says here, Ha'arba yesodot arma'a shebo olam ha'shefel. And the four elements of this physical world. These refer to the Chochma, the Bina, the six spokes of the Tiferet, which we say, remember, Tiferet, Hesed, Gevurah, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, and Yesod are all considered to be like one combined Malchut. We thus find that the Malchut of the Malchut Sheba of Asiya is the actual foundation of Afar, or the earth, the physical earth, the feet under that we walk on. This is called the Kli, the vessel, the golem, the form, the kolo olam kulo, of the physical world. So, our entire universe is what we call the Malchut of Asiya. Remember, there are other higher realms, dark matter and the like. Those are the higher realms of Asiya. We don't see it. We see the physical universe. In our physical universe, that which connects it to the higher realms is what we call the fifth element. And then we have the four forms of matter. And the lowest form of matter, which we call the Malchut of Asiya, is the earth. That which we walk on. Nope. We've just put ourselves on the map. Ubizeha yesoda afar. And in this foundation, or this element of the afar of the earth, nimtzu kol toledot sheba, we find everything that comes forth from it, kalulim mekol ha'arba yesodot, and this of course includes within it all the four foundations and everything that's going to come forth from it, besod hakol haya mina afar, everything comes from the earth. So anything that comes from the physical world, remember we were talking about earth. We're not talking about necessarily just the dirt under our feet. We're talking about physical form. Remember, you have liquid state, you have gas state. How much of us is actually solid state? Well, pretty much everything. Even our concepts of liquid and solid and energy, right? Within the physical body, everything pretty much comes from that realm of physicality. But everything that keeps us going is something far greater than physicality. Think about it. We all are very familiar with the muscle in our chest called the heart. And we all know how we can mess up the heart. And we all know that in medicine, if and when, God forbid, an individual has a heart attack, they take a, similar to a car charger, an electric shock defibrillator, and they zap you. Try to get you moving again. Energy. We are energetic beings. Or, if you'll allow me to quote good old Master Yoda, luminescent beings are we, not this crude matter. And that's the foundation of Oriental teachings about the secret usage of martial art power. It's the foundation of all of our Western concepts of the existence of what we call a soul, a spirit body. This is the reality underlying it all. Continuing in our text. Now let's explain as we did from above to below. Hine, ken hen mebifnim lachutz. As we described this from above to below, so this is the exact same way from inside to outside. Kihine, yesoda afar kolol me'asa sfirot. The element of earth, we said, is made up of its own 10 sefirot. The keter shebehem, pnimi mekulam, and the keter level of this, again, element of the earth, nikra bechinat yechida, we call that the element of the highest level of soul, called the yechida of the afar. That is what we call the yechida of that element. And external to that is the chokhma level of it, called the chaya. External to that is the bina level, or the neshama level. And external to that, of the six spokes of the teferet, is called the ruach. And external to that, of the malchut, or the nefesh level. Five levels of soul of the element of earth. The zoha malchut nechaleket le'eses sferot sheba. And the malchut, then again, we say, is divided into 10 sefirot therein. The hamalchut achitzona shebehem, and the most external level of the malchut, hu yesod afar atzmo hachomeri, and the most external is the actual physical dirt under our feet, she'en bo shum ruchaniut, which doesn't have any real spirituality to it or energy in it at all. Rather, it's just homer akur, it's just basic elemental modeling clay, all right? Homer akur means like just basic, you know, earth. And that's what we call domem, inanimate. Now, inanimate is just form. And remember, we spoke about the relationship of or lekli, light to vessel. I've often used the term force and form. This is now a big secret, because we believe that if you can apply the correct force and manipulate it in the proper way, you can animate any form whatsoever. And therefore, by using the power of the force, you can animate the domem and turn that which is dead into something which is alive. You know what I'm talking about? This is the secret of how a golem is created. It's not magic hocus pocus. You don't just take a thing of clay, make a little like a little dolly of clay, write God's name in it, and all of a sudden comes alive. No. This is a very intricate, involved system of channeling the energy from the prima matter, the fifth element, all the way down through the systems in the soul. We talk a lot about this in our Sefer Yetzirah course. But this is, if you can call it, the spiritual technology that underlies it. And this is what Rabbi Chaim is referring to here. But let's move on. Kol ma shebifnim nikra nefesh hadomem. Everything within this inanimate is called the soul of the domem. In other words, the inanimate has a soul. Yes, everything technically has life within it. Or what the Ari calls nitzotze kedusha, sparks of holiness. We refer to these as the rafach nitzotzin, the 288, that's a symbolic number, sparks. We seek to elevate these sparks in everything. But everything has life within it. Continuing. Va'al derech zeh, this is the same thing with regards to the element of water. The malchut achitzona shebekulam, the malchut level of water, external of them all, is called mayim hamatzmechim hanikrat somach. And this is what's called, which gives life force. And this is why it's called, if you will, the vegetative level. Now again, water is life. And water, in the vegetative level, it's the etzioretic level, it's a higher level than just the domem. V'kol ma shebifnim, and everything within that level is called the nefesh level of the tzomach, the vegetative level. V'alderech zeh b'yesod haruach. This is how it is at the ruach level, and in the yesod ha'esh, and in the found in the element of fire, which is the chai level, which is the level of speech. Essentially, we have four different types of life: inanimate objects, vegetable life, animal life, and speaking or human life. That's pretty much the way it's divided up. And those are referred to as the four worlds within the Asiatic realm. V'omnam, arbatam yachad, all four of them together, hem hadomem nefesh. Generally speaking, the inanimate, we say, is the nefesh level of soul. The vegetable, tzomach, is called the ruach level of soul. The chai level is called the neshama. And the speaking level is called the midaber, chaya. So the inanimate level is said to have the nefesh level of soul. The vegetable level is said to have the ruach level of soul. The animal level of soul is called the neshama, and the chaya is the human level. And everything has these levels within them. Remember we said subjective within subjective within subjective. And the vilon, that's the yichidah, that's the keter, is your fifth element. The kvar bir arnu, we've already explained, ki kol b'china mehem kolela mekulam, everything has within it everything else. V'zeo ma shenimtza b'divrei ha-filosofim b'shem kochot. And he goes, and this is what's referred to in the philosophical writings under the what they called the powers. Rabbi Chaim is quoting from non-Jewish sources. And he is saying that what he just described here is found in non-Jewish sources, and they call them by a different name there. He calls it by his name for the Jewish. They refer to it by their name within their context. And that's the way we must understand things. How is it that this holy great rabbi would have knowledge of other non-Jewish sources and even make a reference to them? And you question me when I do this? Oh, where do you think I learned it from? Rabbi Chaim, like many of the other great rabbis before him, all studied the wise wisdom literature of the world. It is imperative for us to do so because we see the greater picture. Rabbi Chaim had no problem in doing this, and neither do I. Continuing. Be'omram, ki nefesh hatzomachat, yesh ba koach hazan. What is this nefesh tzomachat? This vegetative soul, that is the power which gives, if you will, to nourish. The koach hamashech, the power of movement, the power of digestion, the power of movements, all these different, power of touch, power of movement, all these different things. This is the way life was understood in the older ways. And this is exactly what Rabbi Chaim is talking about. They would define the powers, the power of movement, the power of sensing, the power of digest, the power of touching, the power of all these different things. Rabbi Chaim calls them different levels of soul. They would call them different powers, whatever. Remember, like I said, different strokes, different interpretations, but all the same. Ken amru b'nefesh ha-chaya, ha-nikret ha-tinu'ah v'amargeshet, the chaya level, level of if you will, moving, feeling, understanding. Yesh ba koach hamit orer, the power of movement. Hamidame, the power of imagination, the power to create thoughts, etc., and so on. Every level of life has its own abilities. Now, let me give you some examples here in the few minutes we have left. Y'all know that I have animals. All right, I have doggies. I communicate with my dogs. No, I'm not Dr. Doolittle. My dogs don't speak English. They don't tell me to go out and do crazy things. My dogs and I don't have telepathic. But I can look into my dog's eyes. And I can see from their behaviors, oh, they clearly have emotions. They clearly have thoughts. And they clearly endeavor to communicate with us, the human species. Some of us humans are smart enough to pick up on it, and others are kind of dense, kind of wonder which one's smarter, the dog or the human. But the other day, we have the mom and dad dogs, and we have little pups. And one of the little pups was getting really into the face of Papa Dog, Texi. And Texi went rawr, right in the face, and the dog went rawr, 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 rawr. And Mommy dog came running in panic, wanting to make sure she was all right and everything. You could see, just like in a human mother, the sense of panic and worry and concern. You see this in an animal. I thought animals were inferior to us. How is it that they have these thoughts, these emotions? Because animals do have thoughts. Animals do have emotions. Are they as involved and in-depth as human? No. But they are there nonetheless. Even plants are known to be able to sense music, sense pain. Is it different from the way we do it? I'm certain it is. But that doesn't mean any less that they are not sensitive to these things. Everything has within it these aspects, these elements. And that's why when you get into the oldest of Torah teachings, when you get into many of the teachings from around the world, they'll tell you everything in the world is alive. The old prophets knew this. The old meditators knew this. Those from around the world who go out into nature, they recognize and know this as well. They recognize these levels of soul that Rabbi Chaim is discussing here. So rather than look at this as just some boring theory, we recognize it as having actual, very literal application. Continuing. Ha'ole me kol ze. So what we learn from all this. Ki gam ha'malchut ha'chitzona shebekol, eze bechina shetihyeh. Even the most external malchut level of any aspect, no matter what we're talking about, hine hi ha'guf shebe'oto bechina. The most external malchut level of any aspect is called its body. Omnam, however, eno nikra guf v'chomer amiti akur, ela ha'malchut ha'chura shebe'asiya. But the only thing that you actually call the physical external body, and actuality that we're referring to specifically, as we understand as physical form, that's only the final or lowest level of the malchut of asiya, from above to below and from within to without. V'zot ha'nekuda levad, hi yesod ha'afar ha'chamuri legamrei, and it's this lowest level that we refer to here as the physical form. This is the physical body, which is the most physical and mundane in all the worlds that we've been discussing. Okay, I'm going to stop here because we're going to then get into a different topic, discussing the nature of the relationship of the soul of man with everything else. But again, understand what is being said here, because these Kabbalistic teachings are as authoritative as Judaism gets for those who embrace the Kabbalistic teachings. And yet it sounds like something from other mystical schools. Well, as Rabbi Chaim is quoting from philosophers, you should recognize and know that there should be no distinction or differences. So this is why we learn. Like it says in Pirkei Avot, who is wise, learns from everyone. I've written about that. You can read my essays on koshertorah.com. And you will also always hear me quote and relate, and like we did in our Israel and Humanities course, Rabbi Ben Amol Zeg, the author of our text there, he was quoting from other sources, whether it's Vedic teachings or Chinese teachings and the like. There is wisdom amongst the nations. Every rabbi, especially from Talmudic times forward, knew and understood this. And so we seek to find not something to dilute our Torah experience, but to complement and reinforce it. And that's what we do, and that's what I pray we will continue to do. So on that note, let's conclude for tonight. I want to thank you again all for your continuing support of the Kosher Torah School. I pray that you would continue to provide for us so that we may continue to provide for others. And again, I thank you all for that support. Thank you again all for joining me. See you tomorrow night. We'll continue then. We'll pick up where we left off. Good night. Laila Tov. God bless. Buenas noches. Shalom.